Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. We are here. We are live. It is Soccer Morning. Thank you very much for joining us. Hope your week is going well so far. Hope you're checking out the Gold Cup. Obviously, lots of Gold Cup talk going on in the world today. Not to mention some of it related to the United States of America. We're going to get to that. Some of it related to Canada. We're going to talk about Canada today. Kevin Laramie is going to join us on this program to talk about why Canada could not score a goal over three matches. Three matches, zero goals. That's the problem. That's a problem. And I'm having technical problems over here. Kind of forgot about something. Yeah. We are here. We're live. I know you guys didn't hear the music. I apologize for that. Settings didn't get switched over here. There we go. Now I know what's going on. Thank you very much. Producer Trevor's trying to inform me of my issues. Yes. We have fixed that problem. We'll be fine. Let's do the headlines this morning ahead of Kevin Laramie coming up in just a couple of minutes. Starting with the LA Times reporting that the deal between the Galaxy and Giovanni Dos Santos is in fact done. As a matter of fact, we've got direct quotes from Chris Klein and Bruce Arena of the LA Galaxy as it relates to Giovanni Dos Santos joining the team. It's going to be a challenge for him, Bruce Arena told the Times. He's not been at a club yet where he's had those kinds of responsibilities. And he's in a community where he's going to be sought after. He's going to have to be mature about it. This is absolutely 100% true. The 26-year-old Dos Santos now takes a step up. He's always been a medium fish in bigger ponds. Now he's going to be the biggest fish, certainly in popularity, in a relatively smallish pond. Let's not be dense about this. MLS and the Galaxy, pretty small pond when you compare that to Villarreal or Tottenham Hotspur. But again, he had Tottenham Hotspur, and at Villarreal, he's sort of just another player. I mean, perhaps a talented player, but not a player with massive expectations. Not a player who will be the Beatles of that league, for lack of a better description. When he arrives in L.A., it's going to be mass hysteria. Now, I know a lot of Mexican national team fans are not happy with Dos Santos making this move, but I think in the end it's actually going to benefit him, certainly going to benefit MLS and the team. I think it'll benefit Mexico. Speaking of signings, speaking of 26-year-olds, speaking of, what was supposed to be big-time attacking talent, Freddie Adu officially signed with the Tampa Bay Rowdies yesterday. Again, 26, back to the United States, just fresh off a stint in Finland. What division was that in Finland? Was it the third or fourth or fifth? DC United, Real Salt Lake, Benfica, Monaco, Belenenses, Aris, Kaiko Rizespor, sorry, Turkish people, Philadelphia Union, Bahia, Jagodina, KUPS, however you say that, Tampa Bay Rowdies. And there's another loan in there. Apparently he went on loan in Finland. I didn't even know about that. For three games. Freddie Adu, 26 again. 26 years old. Just turned 26 last month with an opportunity to rehabilitate his career under a former coach, a man who coached him with the US U-20s and got a lot out of him, Mr. Thomas Rongen. We've had Thomas on the show. Perhaps we can grab Thomas in the near future, talk about this decision to sign Freddie Adu and what Freddie brings to the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Clearly, he's a name. He's got to be more than a name if he's going to actually deliver on the field. Even in NASL. By the way, do not say much ado about nothing. Do not say that. I said it. Do not say it. Stop it, people. Stop it. It's over. Much ado about nothing is over. Turn out to the Gold Cup results from yesterday. Jamaica beating El Salvador 1-0. Bit of a smash and grab from Jamaica. El Salvador, the better team in that game. Jamaica scoring against the run of play. But now they are the group winners. If I'm not mistaken. I had this up in front of me, and then I went and checked Freddie Adu's long list of teams, and I seem to have lost it. Jamaica in Group B. Yes, they have one Group B over, well, yeah, over Costa Rica, who's on 3 points. Sorry about that. Costa Rica finishes in second. They get a 0-0 draw with Canada. Again, Canada, who can't score a goal. And now they move on to the knockout rounds as well in the bottom half of the bracket, or the other side of the bracket from the United States, everyone had determined that. The United States right now still waiting to find out who they're going to play, the third-place finisher in Group B or C. Looks like that's going to be either El Salvador, and then we have Group C games tonight. Trinidad and Tobago playing Mexico. The winner of that game will have will win the group. Guatemala and Cuba at the bottom half of that. So Guatemala and Cuba. And Cuba's still in this, despite the fact they've been a disaster in the tournament so far. Haven't scored a goal themselves. They still have a chance, if they can beat Guatemala, to jump into third place and move on to the knockout rounds. So there you go. Steven Gerrard has made his Galaxy debut. That happened last night. I was keeping track of the Gold Cup, while at the same time maybe taking a peek in on the U.S. Open Cup, the Galaxy in Utah to play Real Salt Lake. Gerrard came on in the second half, played pretty high in the Galaxy formation, higher than you would have ever seen him with Liverpool. And obviously the Galaxy cannot score a goal, and they lose to the RSL 1-0 out of the U.S. Open Cup. That is no skin off of Bruce Arena's nose, certainly. So we will see how the Galaxy choose to use Steven Gerrard, especially now with Giovanni Dos Santos, who they expect to join the team the beginning of August, certainly post Gold Cup. And you would imagine that Mexico will be involved in the Gold Cup for pretty much the full duration of that tournament. All right, let's take a break. You getting it now? You getting it now, right? The better? Yeah. Things all fixed, I think. All right, soccer morning. WorldSoccerTalk.com. Be right back. Talking to Kevin Laramie. Don't go anywhere. Be right back. This Saturday, the U.S. men's national team will play in the quarterfinals of the Gold Cup and will be two steps away from reaching the final for the sixth consecutive tournament. Soccer Morning listeners, I'd like to invite you to join me as I'll be sharing my thoughts and opinions during the game live on Rabble.tv. With Rabble.tv, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to me sharing my analysis. With Rabble, you can listen to my broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in too by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. Will Jurgen Klinsmann be able to get this U.S. team firing in all cylinders again? Find out this Saturday, July 18th at 5 p.m. Eastern, and cheer on the red, white, and blue with me live on Rabble.tv.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Here we go, back on Soccer Morning, joined now on the telephone by our friend Kevin Laramie from up again. It's actually on Skype, and Kevin's with us. Hey, Kevin.
How are you doing tonight? Today. It was a rough night for Canada, so today.
If you were so distraught with Canada's performance in the Gold Cup that you stayed up all night, it probably still feels like night to you.
50% of the reality. That's how I feel this morning. It's a little bit disheartening, a little bit hopeful when you listen to Benito Flores' comment after the game, but at the end of the day, it still stings.
How is it possible that Benito Floro sent a hopeful message after Canada went the full length of the tournament without scoring a goal? I don't understand that.
I'll literally say to you, Jason, the way he said it to us. Jamaica, 0. Canada, 0 for 90 minutes. He said El Salvador, 0. Canada, 0 for 90 minutes. Costa Rica, 0. Yeah. Canada, 0 for 90 minutes.
On the good side, clean sheets across the board. On the bad side, no goals. That's what we're getting.
Exactly. He was talking about how, yes, it's difficult to get the ball, but there's a one quote that I remember from the press conference is really telling. He's like, our players can't dribble. It's like, when you look at El Salvador, from their goalkeeper to their striker, they can dribble the ball. Not us. We're not there yet. There's a different way of just being on the ball. That's what he was trying to explain to us. That for him, he saw a great thing in that tournament. There was a constant progression. Yes, that tournament was not easy because missing six big pieces. You talk about Atiba, Hutchinson, Mark, Nick, Diane. There's a lot of players that were missing for this game. Big, big players. And like Benito Flores said, missing one of them, any game, it doesn't matter. Your team will be good. Missing six of them, okay, we're not the same level then.
Sure. And we know that the amount of depth Canada is working with is certainly one of the issues. There's talent there. I mean, that's where the hopeful message comes from, in addition to hey, we're missing six of our best players. But you know, to not score at all, Kevin, I mean, to not be able to find something off a set piece, to not create, you know, something, a tap-in. I mean, last night in that game against Costa Rica, there were several moments where it was almost, there was a force field in front of the net, and Canada was, they didn't have the password. They didn't know how to get in there.
We all saw that FIFA replay on YouTube where there's about 10 shots and it finds any ways to hit the post, the woodworks, or not go in. That's what it looked like for Canada last night. It was probably the most Canadian moment. That was your tweet on Twitter last night. I really appreciated it. It was crazy. It was like four shots in 2 seconds. It was easier to put it in the net then next to it, and kind of found a way to, it was Tissot on the ball, and then missed a shot, couldn't put it on target. But I have to say, when you look at players like Tissot, who's slowly becoming a threat going forward, that's a breath of fresh air. Still not easy at all just to put shots on target for Canada. They can't finish. They have a really big lack of finishing, in the words of Benito Floro, and we can all see it. We all have two eyes and watch the game. We can realize that they have trouble getting that ball in the back of the net. But it's something, again, to do with the dribbling and the confidence on the ball. And hopefully that exit of the tournament doesn't hinder their confidence, because they were going pretty well in the World Cup qualifying and they had a certain momentum. And hopefully that Gold Cup doesn't take that momentum away.
One player that the Canadian fans were calling for to get some more playing time in this tournament and actually did get a start last night, Jonathan Osorio. And then Floro takes him off with about, 15 or 20 minutes to go. I'm not even sure how much it was.
And to put a defender when you absolutely need a goal, yeah.
Yeah, that was an extremely confusing sequence, and I'm not sure what Floro was thinking in that particular case. It's okay to put a defender on if you're going to push somebody higher or somebody who has some creative ability, but we certainly know Osorio is one of the more creative players in the Canada setup. What exactly went wrong? Because it didn't seem as though Osorio had the influence people hoped he would.
For some reason, there was a chemistry in the Dominica World Cup qualifier between Osorio, Larin, Tissot, and other players. There was a chemistry starting to build. And for some reason, that never transpired to the Gold Cup. You never saw the Larin play with Osorio the way they did against that Dominica home and away series. In Toronto, Cal Larin, I think that miss in that game actually really hindered him. I think it played something with his confidence, and I think in the training sessions, he wasn't focused the same way, and he was not a factor in the game last night. And Canada needed a player like Cal Larin to step up to achieve bigger success in the Gold Cup than they were maybe slotted in for. But without Cal Larin's presence, without Osorio's chemistry, Osorio was actually, he was given the cold shoulder to Benito Floro, really not happy to be taken off at the 69th minute. He was literally at the end of the bench and back to everybody else, and was almost throwing a temper tantrum. But we need that. I was happy to see that from Osorio, because that's what you need, passion. You need to bring this team, Canada team, to, I'm not saying to another level, because there's still a lot of levels left to reach, but to do a little one higher, you need that passion, that almost that little chip on your shoulder that you want to prove something wrong. You want to prove people wrong. And Osorio had that. Mm. Unfortunately, Cal Larin needed to bring that on the pitch, and he wasn't a factor.
Mm, yeah, the miss, the Kyle Aaron miss that everybody saw, certainly, as you said, perhaps something that got into his head. Very tough situation for a young player still learning his craft as a professional. Let's talk about Floro and in more of a, you know, take it outside of the context of this Gold Cup in particular and raise it to the level of the overall program and Floro's direction and leadership so far. I mean, when he takes the job, we know he's got a pedigree of some type. I mean, certainly the type of pedigree that, you know, Canada should be happy to have, although you can make that argument, Kevin, and you can tell me where you fall on this, that, you know, Menino Floro arrives not knowing anything about Canadian soccer, not knowing anything about the players, not knowing anything about the culture, and is thrown into the fire, so to speak. How has he done, and is he the right man for the job?
There's a two-part to that answer, Jason. First one, Benito Floro was almost a savior of Canadian soccer. When he came in, the boat was sinking. So he patched the boat. He put it back straight in the water. It's not sinking anymore. It's actually keeping up level. Now that the boat isn't sinking, he's the one to restart the motor. That's what I'm asking myself. So he stopped the bad confidence, the bad results streak 2 years ago, Benito Floro. When he come, he restructured not just the men's national team, but go down to the U17, U20, U23, all the different levels. He structured the team, got new players into the group, scouted hundreds of players in the beginning. Well, there's not 500 players, Canadian soccer players, but he scouted every single one of them in the beginning of his tenure to bring new players like Tissot, like Becker, players that were not involved in the men's national team program before. He brought that in. Now, that being said, is he the, just, if you look at that just objectively, he's a man that's a little past his prime as a coach. He's not that young. He's a great soccer mind though. And I think his knowledge is necessary, maybe at a technical director position. But then you need a head coach that has a vision, a plan, a 10, 15 year plan to be able to bring this team to another level, bring this team to where it can not just talk about going to the hex, but almost every single cycle be in the X. I think that's the next level. That's what we need to do. And I think maybe somebody that has a different vision going forward, but that's compatible with Floro, could be the guy to take over to that job.
You know, where is, I think one thing that's tough for fans to do, Kevin, is step outside of the situation and identify where their country, where their program should be. I mean, you know, U.S. national team fans have this problem all the time. How much further along should we be? Should we be challenging some of the best teams in the world? Or are we still, you know, fighting with Mexico for CONCACAF supremacy? Are we supposed to be playing more progressive, proactive soccer? Or is it okay if we play some of this defensive minded counterattack style? Does Canada have a sense of where it should be?
I think we have a sense of where we shouldn't be. And we shouldn't be lower than the countries that surround us. We shouldn't be lower than countries that has less resources and less impetus to have a great soccer program. We should be higher than countries like Jamaica and El Salvador. Right now, we might be higher than El Salvador. We're not higher than Jamaica. Canada's not higher than Costa Rica. But when you look at the reasons of why a national team program should be good, Canada's national team program should be good. But for some reason, it's never flourished. And I think when you look at countries like Costa Rica, and I look at the States, our neighbors of the South, us, your neighbors from the North, we don't have the same resources. Your talent pool is way bigger. But in a way, we have to follow the blueprint. We have to follow where you're taking this, and that should be our goal. So I believe that Canada should be higher. If it's not going to be easy to do it, but it should be a goal. That's what they should be striving for. They should be wanting to beat the Americans, or at least be at the same level, the same conversation of level USA, Mexico, or at least Costa Rica and Panama. But for now, I'm not even sure it's there. So I think Canada still is trying to figure out that identity of where it should be.
All right, the last refuge of the frustrated fan when it comes to team performance is individual talent that we can get excited about. If our team is laying eggs, at least we could say, oh, well, that guy played well, and here comes some talent, and we can be excited about the next generation. Give me the next generation of Canada. Kyle Aaron, who else?
Oh, Osorio. There's a the St. Ricketts, him, he's not that young. He's a little older, but what he brought to the table against Dominica. I'll go back to Dominica because that's when Canada scored a lot of goals. So that's probably when we need to look at to get some hope. Becker, Kyle Becker, Lahren. Becker needs more playing time. But I'll bring you to this. One thing Brinto Flo mentioned, you need players to play more. You need players to play consistent minute every single week. And to have one individual player to be better than everybody else, he needs to start regularly, if not every week in MLS. And we talked about Kyle Lahren a lot, but Kyle Lahren is one of the only Canadian players in MLS who consistently, day in, day out, gets some playing minutes with Orlando. And I think that, in a year from now, will bring Kyle Lahren to a different level, but will bring this team as well, at the same time, to a different level, if that miss doesn't stay in his head for the next year.
Well, let's stop talking about it then, Kevin. If we stop talking about it, maybe he'll forget about it. You know, look, this is, we know that the, we know what the limitations on Canada are. The you know, the difficulty of building a program. The CSA has long had struggles just keeping their own house in order. Now you have a coach who knows the game, but maybe is trying to figure out Canadian soccer along the way. It is a country very much like the U.S. or Australia or any number of countries where soccer takes a back seat to a much more popular national sport. I don't know. I want Canada to improve. I'm looking forward to a future in which Canada is challenging for not just a hex spot, but a Gold Cup title and perhaps a World Cup spot. I just don't know how far away. If you had to guess, if you had to gauge, Kevin, give me a sense of what, I mean, people ask all the time, will the United States win a World Cup in my lifetime? And I say, probably not. I don't know. I hope. What would you say about Canada just getting to the level of the hex again?
I believe Canada will be in the hex. If not this cycle, the next one for sure. 2022 seems a great date for Canada just because it fits with the age group that Canada has right now. And if you look 6 years in the future, it'll bring, well, seven, but we can go six. It'll bring more experience, but it's the same core group that if they stay together, if 6 years from now, they can probably qualify for the World Cup. And it's going to be a complicated World Cup with everything that happened in the 2022 bid process. So that could be interesting, but I believe Canada will be at the X for 2022. If they make it out, I don't know. What's really, for me, important is that continuum progression. The one thing Benito Flores was saying is like, yes, the tournament, we did not have the best results. We did not score a goal. We did not play what you wanted. But even in words of David Edgar, this tournament, even though we had the same amount of points as in 2013, the way they went about it, their attitude, their chemistry, their fun in the locker room, all those little intangibles together, were in a different level for this tournament, and players were proud. That's why when the last whistle last night, they all fell to the ground. They're like, wow, we're disappointed. We deserve better. We should have, we could have, but we didn't. And I think because of all those intangibles together in 2022, they'll make it to the X. And I think in 2026, wherever that World Cup is, United States, Canada, who knows, Canada will be there.
Well, that's an optimistic outlook. I like it, Kevin. Now, the question is, another question that I have, and I know last night the weather was a factor, and I know BMO Field was originally constructed with the notion of being the country's national soccer stadium. But the attendance wasn't great in Toronto last night, and you have to wonder if maybe it's time to spread the wealth the way that the U.S. does and take this team around the country rather than playing most of the important games. I know in the Gold Cup that maybe that's not their call, but you do have an opportunity with qualifiers and the like to go play all around the country if necessary. Is that something that the CSA should be exploring?
I think that is something that they should be exploring. If I go back to a couple of months ago when there was an announcement that a Canadian Football League team will be moving to BMO, there's talking about changing the surface. And then Benito Floro and the Canadian Men's National Team program talking about how, well, we're going to have to go play to the other stadium that has grass. Well, that's Montreal. So we're looking at you, Montreal. Next time you have a Canadian Men's National Team game, fill the stadium. You'll get more of them. And I think you're absolutely right, Jason. They need to create more pockets of fans for this team than just in the greater Toronto area. Mm-hmm. If I remember in Montreal, when we do Voyagers Viewers Party, there's 10, 20 people. It needs to be more than that. That culture needs to be bigger. And the best way to do that is to have game in your town is to put that program on the road to create stars of those players and create an identity of that program and how important it is, just the way it does in the United States. Like you were talking about, they traveled that team from Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Colorado to the college and go back to Chicago. Anywhere they get that crowd and they get that advantage, they use it. When Canada plays in Toronto, I don't think it's an advantage anymore because stadium is bigger, like you mentioned, the weather last night, but there's not that intimidating factor. And I think we need to travel to actually try to find it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, certainly that's a tough ask in a country with, in a first world country that has immigrants from around the world. Unless you're playing somebody with a very small immigrant population, you're probably just going to have an outnumbered Canadian crowd, which is always depressing. I mean, certainly for a U.S. fan, I've been there many times certainly with Mexico, but also with some other Central American countries. And, you know, if Canada plays Jamaica in Toronto, I think that crowd's probably mostly Jamaican, or at least half and half in the end. So how do you, where is that spot? And really, you know, you don't want to have to do that, but if there is a place in the country where you say, okay, if we show up here, we can get 20,000, and that 20,000 is going to be largely Canadian fans who are pulling for Canada and giving us a home field advantage.
You need to go in Edmonton, in those areas where that game will be important and you can get that patriotic aspect out and make something out of it. We saw it happen in Edmonton. We saw it happen a couple of times during the Women's World Cup. It was intimidating. That crowd was something. And I think Vancouver could be a good possibility for that too.
Okay. So look, at this point, Kevin, the tournament, the Gold Cup tournament is over for Canada. They're now back on the sidelines, trying to get themselves together for qualifying, which this is not me being some, you know, prima donna American, some superior American. I just don't even know what's going on with qualifying right now because obviously the United States is not involved. You mentioned Dominica. Give me a sense of what's next for Canada.
Next is a home and away series at the end of August, beginning of September, and around round four of CONCACAF qualification, just before the first round robin before the Axe. So it's a home and away series. The winner goes to the group stage, which is a four group round robin. And then the top two moves to the X6 team. So that's where we are right now in the qualification process. Canada won very easily the home and away series against Dominica with a great performance at BMO Field a month ago. But now heading into this September, Benito Flor was talking about after the game, he's happy with the Gold Cup because he did not treat the Gold Cup as just the Gold Cup. He treated the two as a continuation, as a preparation, and as a camp for the World Cup qualifiers. In his words, he doesn't have the team for more than 3-4 days at a time, and he needs to have more than that. So in his planning, when he looked at the Gold Cup and where it was in the calendar compared to the World Cup qualifiers, he used that to create almost a residency type, almost a training camp. He has players for 2 weeks with him. Why not use it to explore, to change things, to practice together, to have quality training sessions? And he used 67% of the World Cup qualifier roster for the Gold Cup to continue that momentum. And hopefully he was right, but that's where Canada is right now for the World Cup qualifiers. This fall against the draw hasn't been done yet, but it's going to be a home and away series against probably a team of the level of El Salvador, if not a little lower.
Okay, fair enough. The teams involved, just to give a sense, in this third round, as you said, the draw has not happened. The draw will be held on July 25th in Russia, because that's where the next World Cup is. Jamaica, Haiti, El Salvador, Canada, Guatemala, Antigua and Barbuda, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Belize, Aruba, Nicaragua, Curacao, and Grenada are your 10 teams involved. Or sorry, that's 12 teams involved in the third round. And so Canada will get drawn against one of these teams, I imagine, one of those bottom half teams, the last six that I mentioned, and have an opportunity to move into the fourth round, which is where the U.S. and Mexico and Panama and Costa Rica all join in. Now, you know, talking about the Gold Cup and the way Benito Floro treated it, the internal question for a coach like Benito Floro, who has a program that he knows is probably going to need an additional cycle. First of all, is he going to see this team all the way to 2022? Probably not. So he's got to do a lot of work. He knows isn't going to be finished by him. But he also has to balance out winning now and trying to bring some positivity to the program and some success to the program. And let's get, you know, let's actually get a couple wins under our belt. Let maybe put in a good showing at the Gold Cup. Therefore, let's bring our best team, which may be an older team, at the expense of bringing in some of the younger players or the next generation. And I know Canada, part of Canada's problem is that next generation, and this is true for a lot of countries, they're not necessarily playing professional minutes. So that's an issue as well. How did he do? How would you, what grade would you give him? And you said 67% or whatever it was. Give me a sense of his grade over the mixing in young enough players that they'll have experience for the next cycle as opposed to, you know, win now. Let's get in some of our older veterans.
I think with the fact that Patrice Bernier were not capped for this Gold Cup, other veteran were not even called in for that. I think it shows that he really wanted the young guns to get some playing minutes, to get some experience. And he was willing to sacrifice the tournament to get those players minutes. That's how important it is for them to play in just together, just to play for Canada together, just to play with that red shirt on. It's so important to get those playing minutes that he is willing to sacrifice a biannual tournament for them to play more games than they did before. The one thing Canada has done since Benito Floro has been here is play more games. They've taken advantage of every single FIFA date. Every single time they can get the team together, they do. Because Floro knows, and you said it perfectly, he's not going to see this team out. But he has the mandate to put this team on the right track and just watch them bloom after he's done with the team. So the next coach is probably going to have an easy job because he's going to have the groundwork done for him. He's just going to have to follow that vision. If it's a right vision, that's another question. But he's going to have to follow that through. And I think that young group that we have now, I'll just take the Tissot, Larin, and Osorio. It really gives a great example of this core group. Those three players together will grow for the next 6 years. And if they get consistent playing time, experience, they'll bring this team to a level that we never saw in Canada. But for that to happen, we need somebody to keep that vision. Now it's been 2 years with the same vision. We're seeing progress. We need to continue to 4 years and 8 years. We need to stop always changing. And I think that's really important. Stability going forward, keep it on the young guns. We don't even need to call back the I don't want to say the old generation, but the older generation, because those minutes are worth something, and you might as well give it to the young guns, because there was a forgotten generation. Let's not create a new one. Let's get those players on the pitch, on that ball. And I'm talking about the Osorios, the 20 years old. Get them on the ball and keep them there.
I believe it's a good question here from Jose, asking if Canada can still get into the Copa America should it take place next year. If I'm reading this correctly, based on the qualification process, doesn't seem likely that Canada is going to make to the Copa Centenario, Copa America Centenario.
No, I know there was, if you win this Gold Cup, you're automatically in. There's another playoff barrage play-in game that will take place. I just don't know what it's for sure the qualification for, but there is a play-in game to get into the Copa Centenario. Yeah. To see if Canada will get there, it's going to be really hard, but there is another way to get in.
Okay, so right now the U.S., Mexico, Costa Rica, and Jamaica are qualified. The two places will go to the winner of the Gold Cup if they're not already qualified. I find it very unlikely one of those four teams won't win the Gold Cup. Mm-hmm. Or playoff winners among the top four finishers not already qualified. That can't be Canada. You've got four teams that aren't already qualified that'll be. And then the last spot is, okay, so I get there. Canada's out. As far as I can tell, Canada's out of next year's. Here we go. Okay. So it's already giving me. This is already saying that El Salvador, Guatemala, Panama, Cuba, Haiti, and Trinidad and Tobago are the six teams that have a chance to get into the Copa America Centenario. So that's just your answer to your question, Jose. All right, Kevin Laramie. You can find him at Off the Woodworks. Where else, Kevin?
CanadianSoccerNews.com. You can read my article, get all the shows all the same place, and KevinLaramie.com for any information or all the shows that I do.
All right, there you go. Appreciate the time, Kevin, and best of luck to Canada in the future.
Thanks, Jason. They need it, but always a pleasure to talk to you.
There we go. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get those phone lines open and talk to you on a Wednesday. How do you feel about the USA in the Gold Cup right now? Saturday's looming. Group C to be determined. Don't even know their opponent yet in the quarterfinals. Be right back. This Saturday, the U.S. men's national team will play in the quarterfinals of the Gold Cup and will be two steps away from reaching the final for the sixth consecutive tournament. Soccer Morning listeners, I'd like to invite you to join me as I'll be sharing my thoughts and opinions during the game live on Rabble.tv. With Rabble.tv, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the broadcast on TV, press the mute button, and then head on over to Rabble.tv to listen to me sharing my analysis. With Rabble, you can listen to my broadcast on your desktop, through your iOS app, and now through your mobile browser. You can join in, too, by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. Will Jurgen Klinsmann be able to get this U.S. team firing in all cylinders again? Find out this Saturday, July 18th at 5 p.m. Eastern, and cheer on the red, white, and blue with me live on Rabble.tv.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
Phone lines are open, 646-832-3909. Whatever is on your mind on a Wednesday. Check in with Pablo in D.C. What's going on, Pablo?
Hey, Jason. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you, sir?
Good, good, good. Hey, I called in to talk about the U.S. Gold Cup, but before I make my comment, I want to ask the big question. Are you coming down to Baltimore?
I am not. I had thought about trying to make the trip up to Baltimore for the quarterfinal, and just things didn't come together. And it ends up being that I'm going to be on the mic with Rabble.tv. So I'm going to do a call of that game from my lovely little studio rather than attend it. It's close enough that I probably should be able to go, but you know, it got lots of moving pieces, lots of people to be responsible to, and it just didn't happen.
To invite you, you know, for a tailgating or something like that, but I guess it'll happen next time. Maybe,
yeah,
maybe
hopefully.
You should make it down to the U.S.-Peru game in RFK in September.
Well, that absolutely. Somebody's also trying to get me to go to the final, the Gold Cup final, and let's presume the United States is there. I would love to be there in Philadelphia. I think that's the 26th of July, so maybe. Maybe I'll make it out to a U.S. game before the end of the summer. It'd be nice. It certainly would be. Pablo, you there? Okay, we've got an issue with Pablo's phone.
Discussion.
Yep, well, the worst delay in the world. Call back, Pablo. I apologize. I didn't know if you were there. 646-832-3909 is the phone number. If you're going to call in, also make sure you're not listening to yourself while you're talking to me. That will get you confused and create a big delay in where I think that you're not on the line, and then I drop you, and I'm sorry. All right. 646-832-3909. We can talk about Freddie Adu, who is now a Tampa Bay Rowdy. The reports are that he's not making a ton of cash down there in Tampa, that it's not about that. Clearly, at this point in his career, at 26 years old, he's a guy that needs a stable environment with a coach who understands him, believes in him, knows him. Certainly Thomas Rongen knows him. He's run through a string of clubs where it was more about Freddie Adu, famous guy, than it was Freddie Adu, soccer player. And that's not to say he was good enough to play, good enough to get into teams, good enough to stick around. But clearly there was a tournament Burnham kind of attitude when it came to Freddie Adu. Let's go back to Pablo. Sorry, Pablo, you got to be a little quicker.
Yeah. Sorry. I wanted to talk about all the discussion going on with the central defenders with the U.S. And granted, I entirely agree with all the critics saying, you know, the Brooks and Alvarado and, you know, pairing has not been, not even close to being good. And, you know, and it ends up making a default of blaming Klinsmann for, you know, alternating or rotating central defenders, which I think is a good argument, and also it's being criticized of not keeping consistency with these two players. But I want to remind people that the U.S. has, you know, people can disagree with me, but has never had a world-class central defense pairing. I mean, in the back, Bruce Arena days, Bob Bradley, there would be continuity with, you know, the Bocanegras on Yeru tandems or other tandems, and there was still during the World Cup, we always remember everyone blaming the U.S. Central defenders for a lot of mistakes they've done there. So, you know, I think this issue, until we develop, you know, strong world-class defenders, we will always be struggling with having a strong defensive central defender tandem. And maybe it will change now with, what's his name, Cameron Vickers. Apparently there was a report that came out saying that he's the next Ledley King for Tottenham. And you know, and maybe Brooks getting, you know, older and more experienced, and Niaz got enough. But we just have to know that based on the level of our players, we will not have a world-class a central defender pairing for at least a 1 or 2 years.
But that doesn't mean that doesn't mean we just throw out there whatever we've got, and or we throw out the youngest pairing and say, oh, well, we're not going to get a world class pairing anyway. Might as well go with the kids. I mean, I think that if you're trying to win games, you want to put out there the least mistake prone tandem you've got. You want to put together a tandem that can and look. It depends on your opponent as well. If I've got somebody who prefers to cross the ball a lot, then I'm going to go with Omar Gonzalez because he's got a great ability to win balls in the air. So, I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Do you remember Omar Gonzalez during the qualifying, period? Everyone, you know, freaked. That's why Clemson benched him. We're all like, oh, he's not good enough. He's making all his mistakes. He was getting beaten set pieces. You know, like, so it's not that he's perfect either. I mean, we already saw what the issues that he had, and Beisler had some issues too, and he hasn't been playing, you know, at a great level. So, I mean, I don't think there's a great option right there right now. And you're right, the youngest player is not the best option. And I don't think that, you know, Ventura Alvarado is there yet, not even close. But it's not that we turn around and there's, you know, it's always the grass is green on the other side. But when you look at it, these other defenders have had the same issues in the past game, you know, cycles or whatever.
Yeah, no, I don't deny that. There has been a lot of defensive issues over the years for the Americans. And again, I guess you just select the best of a bad lot and you move on, right?
I guess so. It'll get better. I know it'll get better. You know, Ventura Alvarado, if he gets minutes with the Club America, I'm sorry, the level of competition is better for him than Omar Gonzalez in Galaxy, but he's not getting those minutes. So you're right. I mean, he's not the best option right now, I think. But maybe in next year, if he gets some points, and maybe that's what Clinton is trying to do, to convince the Club America coach that, you know, he should start starting to play Ventura Alvarado. I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know what's in his head.
Well, I've also heard it argued, Pablo, that Alvarado, the system he plays in at Club America, which is something approaching the 3-5-2 or 5-3-2, whichever way you want to note it, covers up a lot of Alvarado's deficiencies, and that those deficiencies show up when he's pushed into a four-man back line with two central defenders rather than three. With the 4-4-2 that the United States plays.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's just, like I said, there's all these arguments to make pro each of the defenders there, even the Gonzalez, Reams, everyone, and against them. I just don't think we have a quality pairing there right now at this moment. But hopefully that will change in coming years.
Yep, I appreciate the call, Pablo. Thanks a lot, man.
Okay, well, thanks. Bye.
646-832-3909 is your phone number. We've got the Gold Cup, the U.S. men's national team again, heading into a quarterfinal on Saturday against an undetermined team as of this moment. Still waiting to find out who that's going to be. We've got some of these things sorted out. Mexico, Trinidad and Tobago tonight, Guatemala, and the other team in that group who I'm blanking on at the moment. That would be, I don't have it in front of me. Who's Guatemala, Mexico, Trinidad and Tobago, and Cuba. It just went out of my head. Just trying to keep all this stuff straight. So the Cubans and the Guatemalans tonight, and then Mexico and Trinidad and Tobago. The winners, those games will determine the last couple of spots in the quarterfinals. Right now you have the United States playing the group B/C third place team to be determined. Haiti and Jamaica in the other quarterfinal on that side. Group C winner, which could be Trinidad and Tobago, could be Mexico against Panama. And then the runner-up of that group facing off against Costa Rica. We could conceivably have a Costa Rica-Mexico quarterfinal, which would be absolutely stunning, considering the way this tournament usually goes. All right, I'm afraid to take this call. I'm going to do so anyway. Jose in Texas. Jose, I know what you're going to bring up here. I haven't had a chance to look into it, which is why I haven't addressed it, but go ahead.
No, it's fine. I appreciate you taking my call. I know I've been tweeting you probably more than I should while I'm at work, but I decided that I was going to give you a call because I've been a little worried for my Montreal Impact. I was really excited when Saputo bought his Serie B team, Bologna, and then they went into Serie A. I was thrilled. I thought perhaps it was going to be a great, a great partnership to have. And I'm still a bit confident that it will be. However, clearly part of the contract and part of the agreement for bringing Laurent Simon, which is arguably the best defender in the MLS, was that they were going to take care of his autistic daughter. And he still had a 3-year contract in Belgium. They decided to break that contract in Belgium to bring the guy to Montreal. And now he is complaining that Montreal gave them their word and they've not hold their end of their deal. And it is very disappointing. Saputo is in Bologna. Yesterday there was an interview with Simon's wife where she says she is very disappointed with the way Montreal have been going about this situation. And I'm just very disappointed, and whatever light I can bring to this, I think is good on my end.
Where did you see this interview, and where is some of this stuff coming from?
Well, I mean, essentially, the hashtag IMFC has been blowing up on Twitter, and also the hashtag SimanGate. Everybody has been very disappointed. I think it was the equivalent of ESPN in Canada. I remember what the name is, RSN, or whatever it is. And Simon said clearly that they gave him their word as far as how they were going to take care of his daughter, and they haven't done so. Now, I'm not an expert in Canadian healthcare, nor do I intend to be, but, there was some sort of misunderstanding, and if breaking a contract in Belgium was part of this deal for bringing him here, I clearly think that had it not been for this deal and they had brought him here, he would have been signed as a DP. So there's some iffy things going on. I feel very disappointed as an Impact fan. Something needs to happen, and Saputo needs to come back to Montreal and deal with this.
It certainly doesn't sound good from what you're saying. I did take a quick peek at Simon Gate. There's some tweets. Now, this is part of the issue, Jose, that we run into when it comes to Montreal. They get isolated. The Impact get separated from the rest of the MLS pack because of the language barrier. And I know they do some things in English, but clearly a lot of their fans are speaking French and conversing in French.
Right.
And
sorry.
So, no. And you know what? I'm just pointing out, like, if this deserves to have a brighter spotlight put on it, I'm absolutely willing to do that. The issue is that it takes you being on Twitter, tweeting at me in English to point out things that are happening in front. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's obviously a convoluted path to getting this the proper attention. This is an interesting development because it's not more than a couple of days since. Hold on a second. I'm gonna find out when this was actually posted. It's not more than a couple of days since the last Laurent Simon went to Montreal and put his family first. Blah blah blah. Story came out.
There was a beautiful story, heartwarming story by MLS.com and it was talking about him, the person, more so than him, the player. And, and just to have this happen a few weeks after that is pretty disappointing. And I agree with you that the spotlight is not really on Montreal too much. I do think that, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm pretty sure I'm not, there is not a single game that is broadcast in the U.S. that is not on the, the specific deals. But as far as Fox and ESPN and Unity CN, there's not a single Montreal game that is broadcast. So, and there are some good players. I don't think that, there's a lack of market. I think Montreal has a good enough team that people would tune in and watch, especially the rivalry with Toronto and whatnot. But, I'm just disappointed with the situation. I hope that Saputo takes care of it. And, I'm just trying to bring light to it. And hopefully, like I said, they just managed to deal with it.
Well, I appreciate you bringing it up, Jose. It bears watching. I mean, obviously, I don't have any particular insight into what's going on in Montreal or what they promised Simon that they're not delivering. But if that is the case, I mean, I don't want this to be, you know, obviously you're not doing this, but we have to be careful about equating this to the entirety of MLS. Oh, the Montreal Impact aren't living up to their deal with Laurent Simon. Then that must mean all MLS teams are terrible and are turning, you know, are not living up to their promises. That's not necessarily the case. But if they got Simon to Montreal under false pretenses and then are failing to deliver on all of those elements of that deal, then, and again, some of this may have been under, you know, it might not be legally binding. It may be a handshake situation. Come to Montreal. We've got lots of facilities. The Canadian health system is very good for these kind of things. We'll help you out. If that's the case and they're not living up to that end, then clearly they should be called out for it, and Simon should be, I mean, it's tough because Simon, probably, you know, he probably feels loyalty to his teammates. He wants to win games. He's a competitive guy. He's played very, very well, as you said, this year. Maybe he doesn't want to rock the boat, but if this is something that's a problem, it deserves a spotlight. I appreciate it, Jose.
Thank you so much, Jason. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Let me turn back to this. I mentioned this yesterday, the Senate subcommittee hearing on the FIFA corruption scandal, some of the things that are happening around the FBI's investigation into FIFA corruption, and the word that there is a subcommittee hearing that will be held to discuss these things, and that U.S. Soccer has been asked to send a representative. Now, they've asked specifically for Sunil Gulati, and U.S. Soccer has said no thank you. There's a story by Brooke Tunstall over at American Soccer Now that addresses this very topic. Why won't Sunil Gulati appear before the U.S. Senate? In it, he outlines that Dan Flynn, the general secretary and CEO of U.S. Soccer, who does handle the day-to-day business of the federation, is much more involved, hands-on, you know, any given day than Sunil Gulati ever will be, is going. He will be answering questions. And while that is probably, Dan Flynn is probably a strong candidate, a fine person to speak on behalf of U.S. Soccer, he is not the figurative head of U.S. Soccer. He's not the official head of U.S. Soccer. That is Sunil Gulati. Why is Sunil Gulati not going to this hearing? Brooke in American Soccer Now inquired with U.S. Soccer as to why Sunil Gulati's not going, and he got no response. So what U.S. Soccer has to say about this, nobody knows yet because they are not speaking. They are sending Dan Flynn, and that seems to be it. I am maintaining that this is a bad look for U.S. Soccer not to send someone, not to send the boss, not just send Dan Flynn, fine. If you believe that he is better equipped to speak on these issues, fine. But you should also send Sunil Gulati, because he is ultimately responsible, as the president, for the direction of the organization, for the organization's associations with people like Chuck Blazer and Jack Warner. He sits on the executive committee of FIFA. He is the one who is involved directly in FIFA governance as U.S. Soccer's president. So why is he not going to this Senate subcommittee hearing? Now, he's not been subpoenaed. There's no laws being broken. But this will be on the official record as the Senate looks into the issue of FIFA corruption. Why wouldn't you want to have Sunil Gulati there? Makes no sense. Definitely a bad look. 646-832-3909. Phone lines open. Did we talk about Jurgen Klinsmann swapping out three players yet for the Gold Cup? Did we talk about that already? I know I did it on the headlines. Altidor, Morales, and Garza out. Gordon, Corona, Beasley in. Now, I think the Altidore swap is interesting, if only because Jurgen Klinsmann has seemed so committed to Josie Altidore over the course of the last 4 years. To see him leave camp and to see somebody like Alan Gordon come into camp is a very interesting development. Alan Gordon has a very specific set of skills. He is big and he's tall, and you can hit him in the head with a ball and he might score a goal. He is strong. He will hold the ball up. Will he be effective at the international level? Remains to be seen. But at this point, it's sort of difficult to argue that he's not an upgrade over Josie Altidore. Josie Altidore's hold-up play wasn't meeting the standard, and he wasn't putting in the effort. Now, he may still be suffering from that hamstring injury he picked up last month and is not fully fit yet. But that is just another reason to say thanks for your service. Time to go back to your club. we're going to bring in somebody else. And I had somebody arguing with me on Twitter that we have certainly progressed from the Bob Bradley era, if only because players like Connor Casey are not getting called into the team to win important games. Well, what does it say about the progression since the Bob Bradley era and into the Jurgen Klinsmann era that players like Alan Gordon are getting called into the team? Now, he hasn't played yet. He may not play. I actually think he will. I think he's going to play some role in this Gold Cup. Probably for the good if he gets on the field for any long stretch of time. He has, like I said, a specific set of skills that may be effective in this tournament. But you can't tell me that Connor Casey being part of Bob Bradley's setup is a bad thing or an indication of where we were at the time, but Alan Gordon's inclusion in Jurgen Klinsmann's team is not. Of course it is. Have we progressed since Bob Bradley? Probably some. It's a deeper team. Are we better at the top level? It's a different question. Alfredo Morales leaving. He had an okay game against Panama. Didn't think he did too much great and didn't do too much terribly. He leaves for Joe Corona, a fine player, a younger player, not a younger player than Morales, but a young player that I like. Greg Garza out, had a howler against Haiti, was absolutely terrible. Was otherwise okay, had some moments. He comes out, leaves the team. DeMarcus Beasley comes in. DeMarcus Beasley, who not that long ago retired from international duty, is now back in the team. Says something about where they are at the left back position. Excuse me. And we'll see if DeMarcus plays. If DeMarcus plays, he may free up Fabian Johnson to play in the midfield or on the right. There's not a person out there listening to me right now who doesn't believe Timmy Chandler should not play one more game in this tournament. If you get DeMarcus Beasley on the left side, and that's a competent figure at that position, you can swap Fabian Johnson to the right, shore up the right-hand side, and not just at the back, but going forward as well. All right. The phone lines have died, and we're going to get ready for the SiriusXM show coming up in just a couple of minutes over on SiriusXM FC 94. Got the Gold Cup tonight, big matches, Guatemala and Cuba. See, I remember that time. Trinidad and Tobago and Mexico. Well, can the Mexicans score a goal against Trinidad and Tobago? A much more dangerous team than Guatemala, but won't sit back as much. So perhaps Miguel Herrera's team figures it out tonight. I think there's one. Is there an MLS game tonight as well? Let's be honest. Nobody's paying attention to MLS right now in the middle of the week. Chicago and Columbus tonight at 8:30. So there you go. That's the exact same time as Mexico and Trinidad and Tobago. So you're going to have to make a decision. Thank you very much to Kevin Laramie for talking to us about Canada. That was a good discussion. Let's see. Hopefully Canada gets their stuff together at some point. Appreciate it. Go to backheel.com/store. Buy a mug. Got t-shirts. Doing the damn thing. I'm going to go shop on Amazon Prime. See you guys later. Bye.